Hey, Philip.
Hey, listen, how are you?
I am good, my friend. I'm a little burnt out because I am getting sick and I've been talking almost all day long. So hopefully you can forgive me for my voice potentially cracking at some point.
Well, I know you mentioned tomorrow you've got a webinar, so hopefully those people are not going to pay the price for us talking now.
I know. I need my vocal therapy after this is over.
Yeah. Yeah. What do? Gargle salt water or?
Drink whiskey primarily.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's see. We're going to talk about today connecting with influencers, right?
We are.
Okay. Let's unpack that. Or no, go ahead.
Well, yeah. I mean, so it's only three words, connecting with influencers. So I guess unpacking would involve what is connecting and what are influencers, right?
That is exactly where I was going to start. You are two chess moves ahead of me, my man. So let's start with that influencers word. That is doubtlessly an overused word. It feels like a cliche.
Yeah.
It sort of fits in the same family as thought leader or I don't know, that kind of stuff. And it just, those of us in the world of marketing have heard about this for way too long, and it feels cliche and tired. Is it cliche and tired? And if it is, let's just end the podcast now. And if not, let's talk about what influencers are.
In a word, yes. Mic drop, it's over.
Boom.
So I think what most people mean when they say influencers is, it could be two things. One is someone who already has an audience who mm-hmm. pays attention to what they say.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing, as the word influence implies, is when this person speaks, people listen, and not only do they listen, but the words are persuasive to the audience.
So we're just talking about cult leaders here, right?
Yeah, so like David Koresh, for example, which is my new marketing strategy in my business. Is it too soon to make a joke about David Koresh?
You're going to be the David Koresh of something, yeah. Right?
Oh, my career plans put out in the public.
Yep.
So, an influencer. And, you know, it doesn't – I think when a lot of people hear influencer, they think, oh, Kim Kardashian or like okay. PewDiePie, the YouTube star. Are you cool enough to know who that is, Philip?
No, but that'll go on my list of things to never look up on YouTube.
Well, so one commonly used, so social media influencer is a commonly used way of saying this. And
let's keep it to the world of business, though.
But I just want to hold on. We're unpacking, aren't we?
I'm already drilling you for more examples.
Oh, man. Okay.
More relevant. Anyway, continue.
So trust me, influencers. By defining who it's not, I'm going to define also who it is. So what we don't mean when we say influencers for our business are these mm-hmm. social media people. Like, that's not going to do any good. So what I mean when I say connecting with influencers and pursuing the opening act strategy, which we can talk about too, what I mean is who out there already has built an audience that you would like to reach because you can help them. And okay. So these people are influential in that they have something to say and they have an audience built. So I'll give you an example. An influencer that hopefully I connected with today was Blair Enns, Win Without mm-hmm. Pitching. Mm-hmm. So he's an author. He reaches a very, very specific market, which is creative agencies, and I think he's calling himself the world's leading sales training company for creative agencies. Is that right? Something like that.
Sounds about right.
So if I wanted to reach creative agencies, and I know Blair's written several books and he has a podcast, Blair might be a great influencer for me to connect with.
Mm-hmm. So here's that is a good example. Maybe that does household name kind of resonate or fit? Like for some people, Blair, when household name is, we think of, you know, Coke and NASCAR and Pepsi, those are household names in the world
Michael
of consumer
Jordan,
products.
Kobe
yeah.
Bryant.
Right.
Right.
Or the Chicago Bulls or like the recognition of what that is and what it means or is like on the level of a global brand.
Right.
So we're not talking about that, but I do think there are kind of within niches, there are still household names like within the niche of freelancing, or within the niche of software development, DHH is like a household name. You know,
yeah,
the guy,
or Philip Morgan, for instance, household
name.
Out.
Get out.
Well, yeah, no, you're right. I mean, and I think the point is someone's influence, it's not who has the most influence in the world. It's who is at the center of an audience that I want to reach. That's what we mean when we say connecting with influencers, is whoever they're known by is very, very important. And that's why we would want to target a certain person like DHH or Philip Morgan or Blair Enns, or, you know, another example of an influencer who I'd say if I passed 10 people on the street, most likely 10 of them wouldn't know who it is, but Seth Godin is probably one of the most famous people in marketing. Mm. And so he would be a difficult influencer to connect with, but nonetheless fits the bill pretty well.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm going to take us on a little bit of a tangent to a tangent here. I was interviewing this guy, Dave, for my podcast yesterday, I think. It was a really fun interview. He wrote a book for software developers on React, which is this JavaScript framework or sort of super framework. And it just kind of struck me while I was talking to him that I don't think very many people set out to become influencers. That's not a life aspiration or a career goal for many people. Maybe it is for some. I have to say I've never talked to anybody who was like, yep, I knew it. You know, from age 7, I knew that I was going to, like some people say, oh, I knew I was going to be famous, but yeah. They tend to gravitate towards stuff like show business or entertainment, right? I can't think of anybody who was like, I decided I wanted to be a business influencer at an early age and worked steadily towards it. And everything that I've ever done has led up to this point where I'm an influencer. Have you ever thought about like that? Kind of, how do people become influencers? Maybe is another way to phrase that.
Wow, that is a million-dollar question, my friend.
That's mechanically, they just get the attention of a lot of people and justify maintaining that attention.
Right.
That's the easy question. But is it because they're championing some big idea, or how do you see that happening?
Wow, that is a book that could be written for sure.
Yeah.
That's a good question. I think it depends. I think some people are have magnetic personalities, and that helps them quite a bit. So a guy like Gary Vaynerchuk comes to mind.
Right. Yeah.
So he's also very polarizing, which helps extend your influence, because people tend to really like him or really hate him, which is a great quality to have if you want to be very well known.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be one. I think another one is you have an alternative or contradictory point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So in his book, 0 to 1, Peter Thiel said one of the questions he would ask people when he interviewed them was, what is common wisdom that you think is completely wrong? Something to that effect.
Yeah.
And so what he wanted to see is, you know, are people able to kind of divorce themselves from the status quo and have this something that may be considered an outlandish opinion, but is backed up by sound reasoning. So someone who comes to mind in this bucket is like Jason Fried, right? So he tends to have a very controversial take on a lot of things. So he says, you know, this whole mythology about working 70-hour weeks as a CEO, don't do that. That's wrong.
Yeah.
Right? That's crap. It's the wrong approach. It's terrible for you. It's terrible for your employees. What you should be asking is, how can I do my job better in just 4 days a week?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think controversy is good, and I think a new or refreshing perspective on an existing problem would be the third category that comes immediately to mind.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe Seth Godin would be in this bucket. You know, I think Blair or you would be in this bucket. So part of your message, Philip, is you know, it's not just about mechanically doing the marketing. It's about the way you're positioned in the space you occupy in people's minds and how they're able to differentiate you and look at you and say, wow, Liston, wow, Philip, you're the only person in the world who does this. Now I have to make a decision about how I'd like to work with you rather than do I want to work with you or the 1,000 other people who are in the same bucket as you?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm still going to keep pressing you on this. So those are definitely, I think I agree, some of the ingredients that have to be combined, maybe not all of them, but definitely some of those have to be present for someone to have a chance at becoming an influencer. Do you think people who ultimately end up being influencers try to do it, or do you think it just kind of happens to them, or it's a byproduct of something else they're doing? And I really am going somewhere with this, because here's where I'm going is, if you want to connect with them, do they kind of resent that because they didn't want to be an influencer in the first place? That's ultimately what I'm leading up to. But really, I do want to talk about this question of, do they try to do it, or does it just kind of happen to them?
So I think what I don't think, to your point, is that someone sat there and said, well, maybe Gary Vaynerchuk did, but I think most people...
he seems like the kind of guy who might have said, you know what, 1 million fucking people are going to pay attention to me every day.
Well, his life goal is to own the New York Jets. So I would guess that he was really targeting big mass awareness. But I think what a lot of people, where they start, is they say, okay, I'm going to position myself. I want to become known for something that's different. And in order to do that, I have to reach some people and spread the message a little bit. And then I think what happens is there's something that's resonant about the person, whether it's their personality or the controversy that they bring or the fresh new perspective. I'm sure the list is longer than that. Whatever it is, there's something resonant that then creates a positive feedback loop. And people will spread the message for you. They'll start to say to their friends, you know, if it's me, maybe something about how important relationships are in business and why your approach to marketing is all wrong. Or if it's you, you know, maybe it's about positioning your business effectively because you'll never be noticed or remembered until you have that. Whatever it is, people will start to spread the word for you when you click with a message. And I think that that's an inescapable part of being a quote household name, right? Like, I really don't believe you can do it all yourself. Some internet marketers pay for so much advertising that they become known that way, not because they're so interesting or have a fresh perspective. It's because they're paying for traffic. But for the purpose of this conversation, I would leave that kind of person out.
Yeah, I'm thinking of this guy who, like, sort of made Britney Spears and a bunch of other sort of, you know, those kinds of music acts. I think he would like scout for talent at, you know, the Mickey Mouse Club in Florida or wherever that was. You know who I'm talking about?
Did he go on to run for Senate in Alabama?
Maybe. Seems like a
different guy. Maybe.
Different guy.
That's pretty creepy. I know who you're talking about. Story as old as time.
Yeah, I don't know the guy's name or much about him, but he just had this knack for, like, he created impact the way an influencer does. Like, influencers impact people, I think, is one way to think about them, right? He had that kind of impact, but it wasn't directly about him at all. Like, we don't know his name, and I bet there aren't 100 people who know this guy's name. But he had that kind of impact through others. So that also seems to be a quality of influencers, is that they don't exactly become a cult of personality, but people know who they are.
Well, like Jimmy Iovine, you watched The Defiant Ones, right?
Right, right.
Yeah. So I would say in that case, you're a producer, right? You're cultivating talent and resources in order to make something great, but you're the orchestrator of it. You're behind the scenes. To me, that's not an influencer at all. That's that's a very different talent, but an amazing talent that I really envy, but I kind of suck at that. So,
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about connecting with influencers.
Yeah. Well, I guess the first question, Philip, is why on earth would anybody want to connect with an influencer? Do you, like, what do you say about that?
Yeah, they seem to be intimidating people who must be incredibly busy. Why, indeed, would anybody want to bother them? Right? I think we can rule out the sort of, I want to meet my hero kind of motivation. That's not really it. Or there's not much business value in doing that. It's not like, oh, I want to meet Blair Ends because I read his book and I think he's amazing. Maybe you would, but that doesn't really, how does that help your business? So we probably rule that out, right? That's not part of the reason why.
I agree.
Okay.
Well, so I get asked this question quite a bit. And, mm-hmm. you know, to your question originally leading up to this is, if people want to become influencers and become influential, when people reach out and try to connect with them, it's probably self-affirming for them, right? Like they go, oh, I've made it. And mm-hmm. Is that the point you were making? That it would be easier if they wanted to become influencers, but if they were reluctant influencers, then they wouldn't really want to talk to you?
Well, I don't know that I was making a point so much as saying, maybe we can understand these people that we might be connecting with. This whole, you know, our whole episode here is kind of predicated on the idea that there's some reason to reach out to influencers. We're very being coy about what that might be, but we'll get there, right?
Yeah, sure.
So if it's valuable to reach out to these people, what is it like to be them? Because I think that's one of those, you know, real big ideas about outreach is, giving a shit about the person you're reaching out to so you can reach out in a way that makes sense.
Well, I don't know, Philip. You're an influencer. What's it like to be you?
So I have either convinced myself or fooled myself, or this is really true, that I am working in service of this idea that I really believe in, which is that specializing is valuable. Not equally valuable, it's not for everybody, but for some people, it is like the shit. It is the thing that's going to make a huge difference for them. So in a way, I'm like in service of that idea. Obviously, I need to make a living. Obviously, I want to make a really good living. So it's not like I'm totally selfless, but what I'm doing in my business is all about promoting an idea that I think is bigger than me. And I'm not the originator of this idea. I found it so personally useful that for me, it made sense to sort of build my business around promoting this idea because I think it does help people. And I know it does. I have proof that it does.
Yeah.
So in a way, I am kind of like someone at the DMV. It's not a hassle for me to help them if they come to me for help, because ultimately it furthers my goal, which is not, you know, promoting Philip or necessarily growing Philip's email list or anything like that. It's spreading this idea and being a better advocate for that idea. So there's all the time, if someone asks me a question like, hey, how does specialization apply in my particular situation? I have seen people react to that kind of approach, being approached that way in very negatively. Like even some peers of mine, they're like, well, they're trying to get free consulting out of me. And I think, no, I'm actually getting to deepen my understanding so I can be a better advocate for this idea.
Right.
So, or if someone's like, hey, I'd love to be on your podcast. I blah, blah, blah. And if that lines up with me promoting that bigger idea, I'm like, yeah, sure. Let's set up a time. So my general approach is if there's an alignment between what they want and what I'm trying to do, it's NBD. It's not a big deal to help them, to give them some of my time, to listen and pay attention to what they're saying and think about it and make a decision. But if the alignment is not there, then all that stuff is a hassle I'd rather avoid.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. So to your question, what do influencers want? What's it like to be them?
Yeah.
And I would say generally they want what anybody contacting them wants. They want to advance their business. They want to become more influential. They want to impact people's lives in a positive way. You know, I think they want what you want. Now, that said, because of that, there's got to be something in it for them. Mm-hmm. So I've been surprised by one thing when I've reached out to influencers, and that is they're much more accessible than most people assume they are.
That's all. I completely agree. For me, when I emailed Al Reese, one of the co-authors of the original book on positioning,
yeah,
and he got back to me like the next day,
yeah,
I thought, holy crap, no way.
Right. Yeah, and I'm sure Al's perspective was, Philip looks credible, and damn, I wrote this book 30 years ago, or however long it's been, and like, that's awesome. Someone still wants to talk about that.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he believed it when he wrote the book.
Yeah.
So he still wants to talk about it, and I believe he still has a business that he's running. Is that right?
I think so. Yeah, I think he's kind of passed the torch to his daughter, who probably does most of the work, but he's still, I mean, as far as I don't keep an eye on the obituaries, but he was alive, you know, 2 years ago when I interviewed him, and still kicking. You know, his hearing has declined to where he can't do an audio interview, but
I see.
We did an email interview.
Okay.
In lieu of that. And he was very happy. Like I sent him some questions on like a Wednesday, and then on a Saturday he got them back to me. He was super responsive too.
So does that mean you wrote out all the questions and then he wrote out the answers and then maybe you asked follow-ups and that was it?
That's right. He sent me a Word document with his answers in them.
Tight. Well,
yeah,
you can make lemonade out of that.
Yep. So, and I just over and over again hear stories just like that confirm what you're saying. Now, to be fair, I reached out to Blair one time, Blair Hens, and was like, we'll save that for later.
Oh,
it doesn't always work that way.
You've piqued my interest, but so let's just get something out of the way now.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is 100%. Nothing in life is 100%.
What?
I know. Crazy, huh? And people intuitively know that, and no one listening to this would disagree with what I just said. Yet, they'll still get really bummed out if it doesn't go well for them when they reach out to an influencer. Now, I'm noticing a pattern lately, and that is not with influencers in particular, but all human beings. People are getting really annoyed by any type of outreach.
Mm.
And I think it's just that there's so much spam that comes into the inbox that, you know, people have kind of this deep vitriolic reaction to it.
Mm.
And so, you know, there's ways around that, but you also have to know going in when you look to connect with an influencer that it may not go well and they may be a little bit peeved and it may just be a bad day or a family emergency, or there's all these reasons why it may not go well when you talk to someone, and you just have to say, okay, that's all right. But the thing go ahead, Philip.
Can you pause there for a second? And
sure.
What is the worst reaction you've ever gotten from either an influencer? Let's just keep it to influencers you've reached out to. You can, you know, not name names if that helps, but I'm just like, how low does that bar go, or how terrible could it be?
You know, I'm trying to bring up an email right now of a guy who sent me a really nasty, nasty, nasty email.
Oh, and this was somebody who was some kind of influencer?
Well, he fashioned himself that way. I would say he was not.
I see.
Okay. But he ended up, so here's the story. I had an assistant, and her only job was to get me onto podcast guests, guesting slots. So in the first, I guess, 2 quarters of this year, I probably recorded something like 25 or 30 episodes for various different podcasts.
Okay.
And so she was reaching out to a lot of people at volume.
Okay.
And
She was moving fast and breaking things, it sounds like.
Well, in her defense, she was, first of all, great. But also, I didn't have her write a custom email to everybody. And okay. I should have done that.
Okay.
And
okay.
so that, you know, I basically told her, put together the list and then, you know, dump people into this campaign and then we'll see what happens.
So you're kind of a uniform, one size fits all, quote unquote, email blast or sequence of emails to try to get booked on podcasts.
Right. And let okay. the record show that I've done a complete 180, and I think this is absolutely yeah. the wrong approach now. But in any case, that's what I did. And this person knew, oh, okay, this went out to a bunch of different people. And he wrote me this email about how unprofessional it was. And he knows that I didn't write it to him. And, you know, it's a pretty small world and we run in close circles. So I should really mm-hmm. be careful about how I do this. Mm-hmm. Which sounded like some sort of strange threat.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think I told you about it at the time, Philip.
Yeah.
And I just felt like, one, get over yourself. That was the first thing I thought to myself, was like,
yeah.
come on, man. Like, if you don't want to be on, or you don't want me on, that's okay. But, like, the reason I reached out to him is I really felt that I could add value to his audience.
Yeah.
Like, I could say something that would really help people. Like, that was always true. The form it took was one that he didn't appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that was the worst, where he wrote, I'd say 500 words about how unprofessional and awful I was for doing this.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, after the first sentence, it's like, okay, dude, I get the point, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's yeah. nothing more you can add to this conversation.
How long did it take you to get over that?
Well, get over it. What does that mean? I mean, I was back on the horse the same day. I was still contacting people.
All right. So didn't like really materially change anything.
No, it didn't derail my plans or anything.
Yeah.
I mean, it always sucks when that happens.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, some percentage of people are going to do that. And I can tell you now, like, even when I customize emails, often people don't think that I'm reaching out to them directly.
Yeah.
That's how bad email has gotten. Like, people don't even believe that it's one-to-one communication often if I'm going in cold.
Yeah.
And there's ways around that, like adding a video or visiting their LinkedIn page or doing other things that show, like, hey, it's actually a person here
mm-hmm.
doing this. But yeah, you know, I would say don't let it get you down, because some small percentage of the time it's going to happen, but it's definitely the exception.
Mm.
What about you?
I think that exceeds the worst thing I've gotten. I can't remember anything in terms of cold outreach that was anything other than we're going to pass, not at this time, take me off your list. I can't think of anything where someone actually took real effort to insult me or try to make me feel bad or like really give me a tongue lashing over email. Like, I mean, there have been other weird things that haven't been outreach related, like a guy doing a chargeback on my book for no reason, or when he could have more quickly gotten the money by asking for a refund or stuff like that. But that's not related to outreach. That there's been stuff that's kind of made me grumpy for a day or two, but I don't think that's ever happened in conjunction with outreach.
Yeah. And,
add context, I've not done as much of it as you have. So there's that as well. Like, you do something enough times and, you know, statistically, you're going to run across a jerk who had a bad day and wants to take it out on you.
Well, I was going to say, I think there's most times when that happens, there's something else going on, right? And so I don't
think that it's something that has nothing to do with you, right?
Yeah. And it still stings, because who wants to be told that they suck?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like, okay, well, shit happens. And, you know, I'll actually tell you, I've gotten a couple people who are like, when I've done cold outreach, who respond negatively, and then I'll say, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Like, here are the five reasons I reached out to you. The only reason I reached out to you in the first place was I had this very specifically cultivated list of people, and here are the reasons why I think you're perfect.
Yeah.
And usually they'll agree to do whatever I'm asking at that point.
Yeah.
So I'll give you an example. I reached out to Ollie Gardner, who is one of the founders of
Unbounce,
the landing page creator.
Yeah.
And I sent him an email. I thought I had put the liquid tags in there, but I'd used the wrong brackets. So no custom information went into the email. So it was like, hello, and then it's like name of contact in brackets. It literally says the text name of contact in all caps. Right. And like throughout the email, there's four or five things that I thought were going to be liquid tags, but were just all caps and brackets. And he responded something like, this is, and then all caps and brackets, like insert insult and unprofessional conduct or something like that. It was really funny. Like he was obviously poking a joke at me.
Yeah.
And I responded, I was like, man, I'm so sorry about that. Like, here's what happened. I'd still love to have you on. And he came on.
Yeah.
After that, after all of that, he came on. He's like, well, you got my attention. I don't know what to say, man. So
did you guys joke about it on the podcast?
Right. I think we did. Nice. It's been a while now, but in any case, you know, I think that the key thing when you're looking to create a relationship with anybody, and this goes for contacting influencers as well, is to figure out what can I do that's in our mutual interest? Like, how can I help this person? What do they want? So that was your question, right? So what is it like to be an influencer? What the hell do they want? Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, you know, if I reach out to Blair Enns and he has a book coming up, it's to sell the book and get great reviews on the book. Right. And like, that's cool. I think I can help you with that, right? I can bring you to an audience of people. It's not a giant audience, but maybe some people who are on my list and in kind of my tribe are interested in hearing what Blair has to say. And that is something that I can do for him. So, you know, and different people want different things. I talked to Andrew Warner of Mixergy, and the way I got into contact with him is I think I just sent an email one day. I think they sent an email and they were like, anybody want to come have whiskey with Andrew? And I was like, yes, like right after I sent him an email. And so I did. And he was telling me one of the key prospecting tools that he used is to figure out who has a book coming out soon. And so he'd reach out to that. There's a coming soon section in Amazon. He'd reach out based on that, anybody who fit, and he'd say, hey, I see you have a book coming out. Do you want to come on the show and promote it? And that greatly accelerated the yeses that he got.
Wow, that's very interesting. I think this is informative for our audience for me to say this. I had this assumption that from day one, like he must have just had people approaching him to be interviewed.
Oh, not at all. No one knew who Andrew
but
was.
That's revisionist history thinking where you look at someone's current kind of footprint or fame or whatever, and you assume it's always been that way for them, right?
Right.
But now that you mention it, I'm like, well, that's dumb that I would have thought that. And of course, he had to probably hustle at the beginning to get his sort of show off the ground.
So I've been working on this new content, Philip, and I have a question for you.
Okay.
Have you heard of a band named Derek and the Dominoes?
Yeah.
Have you really?
Yeah.
Are they? I've never heard of them.
Okay.
So December 4th, 1970, I've never heard of this band. Apparently, some people know of them. They were the headliner, and the opening act was Elton John.
Huh.
I think it's safe to say orders of magnitude more famous than Derek and the Dominoes. Would you agree with that statement?
Right. Yeah, in the sort of final assessment, the in the long view, yeah.
So, point being, everybody starts as an opening act. The Beatles, The Doors, yeah. Britney Spears, Lady Gaga, right? Like every musician you've ever heard of who's uber mega crazy famous, Jay-Z, Beyonce, like pick your genre. They all started as an opening act, right? Same with Andrew. He had to start somewhere, and that start was like scrappy guy doing this podcast in Argentina because he didn't have access to people locally. And he had to convince them to come on. And
Argentina?
I think he was living in Argentina at the time he started it.
Oh, wow.
Which is why all the interviews are remote.
How interesting.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, now that I'm looking at the Wikipedia article, Eric Clapton was a member of Derek and the Dominoes, which is probably why. That's probably actually the only reason I heard of Derek and the Dominoes is maybe, you know, hearing in some bio of Eric Clapton that association.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well,
aside from that, they might have just faded into obscurity. But yeah, at the time, they were more famous than Elton John, who is now definitely more famous than they ever were.
Yeah. It'll be interesting because I'm giving this example on my webinar tomorrow. So we'll see if anybody gets it.
Yeah.
I don't know if you would have been able to tell from a photo, which is the way I'm going to ask. Who knows who this band is?
So we'll see. Yeah, they look like every 70s band.
Exactly. Time.
Although Eric Clapton's, like, for people who might be fans of him, he is, I think, recognizable. There's just something about his face that is kind of always looked the same, apparently.
Well, maybe people will think it's Cream then.
Or the Yardbirds or one of those, you know, British sort of blues rock 70s groups. I wonder if there's another example we could think of real quick. Probably don't want to... bore people with trying to think of that. But anyway, that's a good enough example, I think.
So anyway, the point is that I think the big point that I'm making is if you're the opening act, you can leverage the audience of the influencer. And to your point, what's it like to connect with an influencer? Really not that hard, so long as I think you're sincere and especially if you can make it a mutual interest. So don't reach out to someone and say, can I pick your brain? That is not a good way to get a hold of an influencer because they're like, you know, again, put yourself in their shoes. What are they thinking?
Here we go. I found it listing. This is on VH1's website. A timeline of opening acts who became bigger than the headliner.
Oh, okay.
What do you got? Again, I don't want to get us too far in the weeds here. The Beatles opened for Roy Orbison. That'd be a good example because people will probably recognize both of those.
Yeah, so I saw that one and I thought, Roy Orbison's a little too recognizable. Yeah, this is the one I had. So you can see example number three, Elton John for Derek and the Dominoes.
AC/DC for some band called Rainbow.
Mott the Hoople. I've never heard of them.
Yeah. Taylor Swift for Rascal Flatts. They're pretty
famous, I'd say.
Yeah, that's true. Katy Perry for No Doubt. Those are both names a lot of music fans would recognize.
Yeah, No Doubt is uber famous.
Lady Gaga for the Pussycat Dolls. That's interesting. Yeah, what a great analogy, man. That's a really cool example.
Well, thank you. Let's wrap up like this. I'm guessing if some people are bought into the idea that influencers are great people to know and that it's easier to connect with influencers than you might think, they're probably wondering, okay, what do I do about it? What would your advice be in terms of connecting?
Well, one advice is let's do a part two on this. Seriously, that exact question, because that's always the biggest question is like, okay, I understand stylistically how I'm supposed to do this, right? Like, I understand it's got to be a win-win or it's got to be in their best interest or there has to be some alignment between our vision for what this could be. That's the easy part. The hard part is like the specifics of, okay, I want to approach person X. I think there's a level of research you have to do. You really got to do your homework.
Yep.
And there's this sort of scrappy out of the box thinking that some people are really good at. Like I got to be honest. I had no idea that Amazon had a list of coming soon titles.
Right.
And I did not, even if I did, I might not have connected the dots to, oh my gosh, that's a way to, mine that for relevant stuff and find people who are potentially future influencers to connect with. And, you know, all that stuff is, it requires this kind of deep thinking and maybe a sort of empathy or a kind of like what if type of thinking, like, well, what if I did this or what if I tried that? And that takes real freaking work to do that stuff.
Well, and to your point, and I think we should do a part two on this because it's such an important and big topic. But if on part two, Philip, we sat here and we rattled off 10 tactics that you can use tomorrow, they wouldn't work anymore.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, because our podcast is so influential that millions of people are going to start using those tactics now. But
that's exactly what I had in mind because of our gigantic reach.
Yeah. Now, the law of shitty click-throughs, something works for somebody. An influencer hears about it, promotes that thing. Now everybody knows, oh, what's a contemporary example you can think of something that's becoming less effective because it's overused? I mean, I guess outreach.
Sales emails are notorious for this. People go, oh yeah, the alien email, that doesn't work for 6 months. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I think.
So people latch onto this thing. It becomes overused, saturated. It stops working or it works less well.
And the timeless thing is, so what you described is what I would call triggers, right? So in sales, we call them buying triggers. Like, what are signals that I can pick up that would tell me what strategy to pursue, right? Or that this person would be ready to talk to me. I'll give you an example, and then we'll save the rest for part two.
Mm-hmm.
I read a blog on HubSpot in the sauna at the gym, and okay. It was by a guy who runs a sales enablement. Well, I guess it's like a corporate learning platform, right?
Okay.
You load your content in there and then you can see who took each course and where, how far they got and whether they got certified. Mm-hmm. And the article was all about how well his sales team was doing. Mm-hmm. And so I reached out and I said, hey, so-and-so, see that your sales team's kicking butt. I'm sure it has something to do with how awesome your platform is too. I bet you're using that to educate everybody on your sales team about how to be better at selling. I'd love for you to come onto the podcast and talk about it. That took one email and the guy came on.
Nice.
That was it. And it was because I was able to put all of that together, right? It showed, like, there was no way for me to fake that was direct outreach. Yeah. And also it showed, like, okay, they're promoting how awesome their sales team is. They probably want to hire more reps, right? So that would be one reason he wants to come on, but he also wants to promote how great the platform is. And that's exactly what he wanted to do. And I was able to glean all of that by reading this article. And then here's the big teaser for part two. I just tried, right? I just reached out to him. I didn't sit on it. I didn't stew about it for a week or two. I just sent the damn email and saw what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's something we could dive into deeper, which is this idea that you can't really make people do something they don't want to do. So you're looking for signals of what might they want to do that I could dovetail with or facilitate or help them do more of, or do it better, or do it easier, right? And if they're an influencer, they kind of have this public footprint that you can look at, like articles they've written, things they've said, events they've attended. Like, in a way, they're kind of a public personality a little bit,
right?
And so they leave a record of what they've done and a little bit what they're thinking or what they're saying in public. And those are maybe the clues for, like, you're not going to probably get them to do something they don't want to do or something they've not ever thought about doing, but you can definitely give them an opportunity to do more of what they're already doing, right? And that's kind of what you're saying you did.
Yeah, I love it. Well, let's tackle that and explore that and maybe some real tangible tactics that people can use in the next episode, because I think this is such a big topic. So yeah, let's keep them waiting here, Philip.
Sounds good, man. It was great talking to you about this. Listen.
Same here, man. Have a good one.
You too. Bye.
Bye.